reinkommen kann. Ein bisschen smoken, chili, chillen, um du weißt schon, Mann. Dein Hals macht knickknack, wie das Brötchen von Nicknacks. Zick, zack, zirkel das Blatt, wenn ich nur Shit ha. Quam E, ein FC ohne Goldkette. An alle Ghanesen, mir ihr Hart ist der Peppe. Ich bin Hamburgs Erster wie der Fernsehkanal. Keine Angst, Brüder und Schwestern, mein Text ist halal. Bin ich da mit deinem Kommerz, weil dein Kommerz nicht mit Herz ist. Und bin ich da mit dir, wenn dein Konto gesperrt ist. Der Nigger aus dem Vierten schreibt Gedichte wie Goethe. Quam hat Bock wie ein Bauer oder Hirte. Bin down mit dem Shit wie ein Chip, der in den Dip Dip. Down wie ein Penner, der verzweifelt an sein Wein.
Schluss mit dem Selbsthass, step an das Mikrofon und zeig den Leuten, was du drauf hast. Schluss mit dem Selbsthass, step an das Mikrofon und zeig den Leuten, was du drauf hast. Ey, sag mir, bist du down, 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 down. Ey, sag mir, bist du down, 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 bist du down, 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 down. Ey, Bruder, bist du down, down, down. Ey, Bruder, sag mir, bist du down, 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 down.
Considering a master's, MBA, or doctoral degree? Mark Wednesday, March 1st in your calendar and get over to the UBC Nest for the graduate school fair. Or do you want to study, work, or volunteer abroad? Get down to the Vancouver Convention Centre on Thursday, March 2nd to visit the Study and Go Abroad fair. Both events are free. Check online at studyandgoabroad.com for more info.
Now, when you were starting out as a writer, you were black, impoverished, homosexual. You must have said to yourself, gee, how disadvantaged can I get?
Well, no, I thought I hit the jackpot.
Oh, great.
It was so outrageous, you could not go any further, you know. You had to be, so you had to find a way to use it.
Curated by Barbara Chirinos in partnership with Viv Van City Theatre. The annual Black History Month film series shines a spotlight on African North American film and history. This year's program encompasses music, political protest, spiritual, emotional, enterprise, and endeavor. The centerpiece of Black History Month at Van City Theatre is the exclusive Vancouver premiere of the Academy Award-nominated documentary I Am Not Your Negro, screening from February 24th. Other highlights include Julie Dash's seminal Daughters of the Dust, the music films Molly Blues and Sign of the Times, and a new Canadian documentary about the untold history of black hockey players, Soul on Ice.
Hello, and welcome to CITR 101.9 FM. You'll speak of Real World with Bama and Dora.
Become a CITR member and make some new friends.
Members get discounts downtown at Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium, the Cinematheque, the Fall Tattooing, Selectors Records, Community Thrift and Vintage, Vinyl Records, Sakura's, Classical Records, and Beat Street Records.
What would we do without
our friends? Well, it's the one song that I can find. And it's really, really awesome. I don't recommend anyone. And the music video is really cute. Today we have very special guests. First of all, we're supposed to.
Oh, okay. Okay, so the theme for today is actually just like Ava DuVernay films. And if you don't know who Ava DuVernay is, she is the director of Selma and The Thing, and she's this African-American woman who is very successful recently in doing films. So we decided that we wanted to talk about it. But my parents are in town, so
we're gonna
talk about them instead for a little while, and eventually maybe talk about Ava DuVernay and her films.
Well, hopefully it'll like seamlessly integrate itself into the combo.
Somehow.
How are you guys?
Speak into the microphone, please.
Really excited. Do you guys want to like introduce yourselves?
Yeah, introduce yourselves.
My name is Connie. I'm Dama's mom. I was born in the U.S. After a couple of years married with Matias to Brazil, where we spent 17 years almost. We recently moved to Mexico, so that's our more or less our path.
And I'm Matias Dama's dad. Yeah.
What do you do for a living, both of you?
You want me to say I'm the evil man of the agrochemicals? Yes, that's me.
And I do what I can wherever life takes me. I'm a speech pathologist, and I was very, very lucky to be able to do what I like in every one of my different destinations. So in Brazil and in Mexico now, I work with kids. I've specialized in dyslexia lately. And I'm excited. I love what I do. So I'm always trying to find something to do. I move a lot, but I always find a way to do what I like.
Why'd you guys move to Mexico?
Actually, I work for an international chemical company, and they keep moving us around. So they moved us to Brazil, to the U.S., back to Brazil, and now they're moving us to Mexico for a couple of years.
How do you guys like it?
It is very nice. It is totally different than Brazil.
How so?
It's drier. It's colder. But very nice. Very nice, nice people, right?
It's a nice change to hot and damp. Like the whole year hot and damp. We were a little bit ready to try something different. And Mexico was a great, great option. I love Brazil. One of our kids is Brazilian. Dama's youngest sister is Brazilian. And so we love Brazil. We carry Brazil in our hearts. And
now
but
and
it
always.
Was
now and always.
Yeah. And
gorgeous.
But we are very excited about our new destination. Mexico is a really, really welcoming country. Lots of culture, lots of places to visit, food, people.
Better weather.
I don't know if it's better. It's a lot different. It's like you're changing humidity for dryness. I don't know. It's like
you know what else is exciting about Mexico? They have Mexican wrestling. that I'm gonna go see next week with my daddy. Right.
I'm excited to hear about
it. Great program.
I am so excited for it. It's gonna be so good.
He knows a little bit more. Explain a little bit more about the lucha libre.
Explain about the lucha libre, papi.
I don't know much about that. I know that it's a national passion. They are, unproportionately and surprisingly very passionate for lucha libre or wrestling.
But you don't understand why?
I don't really know. I really don't know.
Okay, can I explain?
Yeah.
Okay, so like it's basically the mythology of is the modern mythology of the Mexican cities, because the way that the US has superheroes and comic books, Mexico didn't have like legitimate comic books that became as mainstream as other North American cultures did. So instead, their superheroes were the luchadores. So like that's why El Santo is so important to Mexican culture. Like there's a billion El Santo movies because he was the big luchador guy. He's like Superman, but Mexican. And like it's a big deal that they're all masked because it's exactly like a superhero. It's like their secret identity. No one is allowed to know their secret identity. So the cool thing about Lucha Libre is that like kids could go watch their favorite superheroes basically just go and fight against the bad guys. And there's crazy stuff that happens. There's a bunch of wrestlers that are like aliens and like evil demons and stuff. And it's all just like the good guys, like El Huracán Ramírez, like El Santo, like that come in and like fight the bad guys. So it's like superheroes.
You know, they get to star their own movies as well. It's kind of very rooted into the Mexican culture.
That's huge. I'd never even heard of it.
Yeah, it's a huge thing in Mexican culture. That's why I'm so excited about it. Because like American wrestling is very much like Hollywood in a way. So like it's not so cultural. It's not a thing like everyone knows about. But then like there's the two other like extremes of wrestling. So you have Japanese wrestling, which is also like huge in their culture. And then you have Mexican wrestling, which is the other spectrum. It's really cool. It's really, really cool.
What's the difference between the two?
So Mexican wrestling is a lot more like flips and like artistic stuff, I want to say. Like it's they do a lot of flipping and like showing their acrobatics and stuff. And Japanese wrestling is like they actually hit each other like really hard. Oh. It's a lot more brutal. But they have like legitimate stories behind them. It's so interesting.
She wants to say that the Mexicans are chubbier than the Japanese guys, probably.
No, the Mexicans are the ones that do flips. You need to have strength and aerodynamicness to do flips. They do a lot of flips.
Oh, I love that.
They do a lot of flips.
We make up genres, we make up words.
Yeah.
It never ends here.
It's really great. It's really great. But yeah, I thought it's really cool. It's a huge part of their culture.
That is really cool.
No, it is.
I think the only thing I'd ever heard of it was Jack Black made a movie, Nacho Libre.
I haven't actually seen that movie.
That's
it? Thing, okay. Yeah. Awesome. That would be so funny. It's so silly. I worked in an ice cream store and it was my boss's favorite movie. And every day he'd come and he'd be like, Nacho Libre! He'd be like, okay, Andreas, like, hello.
I guess that's what we're doing today.
I've never been there. I'm curious to see how this is like.
Do you guys have a favorite? Or are you kind of...
I haven't actually seen Lucha Libre. That's why I'm so excited. I'm going to Mexico for this next week. I'm going back with my parents. And, like, that's going to be my first time at a Lucha Libre match, and I'm just excited for it because it's going to be so cool. I have no idea what it's going to be like. Like, in case you can't tell, I watch wrestling. So, like, I know what wrestling is like, but I don't know what Lucha Libre specifically is like. So, we're going to see. I'm so excited.
That's so wild.
Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be flips. There's going to be masks.
I'm told the ambiance is very, very interesting, yeah? Because the Mexicans, that they let go their political views and everything on this kind of shows. So you will hear lots of people on the grades shouting things against and for the president. And certainly it will be something more towards Mr. Trump now, and it will be fun.
Oh, really? I did not even consider the political stuff that would be involved in something like that.
It's a complaint tribune.
Does it ever get like super volatile, or is it kind of just like, oh, we're all just shouting into the void?
Oh, I'm pretty sure it's just like shouting into the void. Like, I don't think it's not like a football match, soccer.
Okay.
It's not like you have two teams. Generally, like, you're gonna be cheering for the good guy, and then there isn't really anyone cheering for the bad guy. Though sometimes there's really cool bad guys, but no one's gonna be legitimately beating someone up over how dare you like the good guy over the bad guy. Like, that's not gonna happen. I don't think.
Are there a lot of similarities between football culture and wrestling in Mexico? Or
I have no idea because we have not been, so I have no idea. I just know. Like, football is very, very violent in the stands. Like, the actual sport is not violent, but the fans get super violent, especially, like, in South America. I don't know what it's like in Mexico. Have you been to a thing
yes,
in Mexico?
I've been. No, they are very much at ease there compared to other fellow South American guys. Yeah.
Yeah, the other South Americans get so aggressive in football games. It's not normal.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming from Argentina. Brazil. Can you imagine a match between Argentina and Brazil against each other?
Like two Argentinian teams against each other, it gets very aggressive.
And two Brazilian teams
gets like really bad.
Like the people that cheer for each team get really, really involved. They're very passionate, and they sometimes they lose their
their common sense.
Wow, there's riots inside of football stadiums.
Oh,
it's really scary.
My dad is like a 6'3" German man. He's quite big, and I would say he's like a domineering person. He went to Buenos Aires for like a conference or something at one point, and he went to a soccer game and he was like, "This is the most threatened I've ever felt my entire life. Like, this is so violent." And I remember being like, "Oh, cool! You like got a hat? Like, no, so exciting."
We actually don't go there because we think it's dangerous. Yeah,
yeah, but it's funny, and we learned when we moved to Brazil that actually in Brazil, football or soccer games, matches were directed to family. So you would see people with kids, many, many women, young people go into the stadium on a Sunday afternoon to just spend a family afternoon. It was, and you didn't see that in Argentina a lot when we lived there. But then I knew through friends, we haven't lived there for many, many years, but we heard that it had started changing in Argentina as well. Like, you could see families and this and that. You always have the places where you need to stay away a little bit from, because you have these organized cheering groups that are like the most violent. But I think it's something, it's like, I really don't want to kind of demonize this. It's, you really can enjoy a soccer afternoon. And I have friends that go there that take their kids, and it's perfectly fine in Argentina and in Brazil. Of course, you need to stay away from the Barra Brava or from in Brazil, they call it the Torcida Organizada, which is like the guys that go there, and it's
looking for a fight.
But also it's I have to be fair, it's like, it's not all violence and all of that. It's an enjoyable sport. I don't go. I mean, I've never been there, but I speak for the people that have been.
She speaks for the people.
I speak for the people, just like Martin Luther King.
Mommy, why are you doing this?
I love soccer. I'm like, in North America, like, people really don't care about it. Like, the most you do is you like do it when you're like 8 and all the kids are like pretending to run around, play a sport, and then you like stop doing it when you're 12. And I find it like so strange that they're like, not strange, but I like love that there are communities that are so passionate about it. Like, I think there's something to be said for it. I appreciate.
Yeah, it's soccer is something that people tend to be more passionate about it. If you think in other countries, like if you go to a German match or an English match, you will still see the cheering groups still very, very agitated. It's not a South American exclusivity.
Yeah, I think it's basically everywhere except North America.
Yeah, like, for some reason, we just don't care.
No, yeah, like, most places that I've heard of actually care about football and have their own teams. It's a pretty international sport. It just, for some reason, did not make it up here. It's been growing lately, I think. Like, there's still not the culture of American teams going off against each other and that being a big deal. But the U.S. got pretty far in the last World Cup.
I think you have many other sports. You have so many other sports. And I think they are equivalent in passion, involvement by their
Yeah, but they don't have football though. That's what's interesting.
I know.
Everywhere else has some sort of football thing going on. And in the North you just don't. It's just really weird that it's like the only place that that hasn't been affected. Like, obviously you have other stuff in it. You have like hockey in Canada, that's huge. You have American football in the U.S., that's huge.
American football, baseball,
basketball. Basketball's a big thing.
Oh yeah. Okay. I don't know.
Basketball games get rowdy.
Oh wow.
This seems like a very natural time to play a song.
Yeah.
And circle back. And maybe talk about the movies. We'll see. I'm having too much fun. This is Swans by off of their. So it's Bless Your Pure Heart is the name of the group, and their album is called
more like F undertow, am I right?
Which is like made for me.
Wow.
So enjoy that. And we'll be back with the real world.
Nice.
Fucking someone and that's fine. I bet I sound jealous and that's fine too. I was pulled over by the cops for reckless cycling. I guess this life is hard, man. Do you blame me for trying? My high girl, she likes swans and bike rides in the sun. My hot girl, and it's strange, she lives on the same block. I want you to think my riding is good. Downtown Saint A, memory of your childhood. I guess it will all be in vain. You'll listen to something else. I guess that that is fine too. My best friend is myself. My high girl, she likes swans and bike rides in the sun. My high girl, it is strange, she lives on the same block. I really want things to turn around. I don't wanna be bitter like this. I've been sleeping with her sister. Confidence called. And man, she is pissed.
Become a CITR member and make some new friends.
Members get discounts downtown at Little Sisters Book and Art Emporium, the Cinematheque, the Fall Tatooine, Selectors Records, Community Thrift and Vintage, Vinyl Records, Sakura's, Classical Records, and Beat Street Records.
What would we do without our friends?
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM.
Yes, yes, you and I rocking with the best, 101.9 CITR Radio. Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze. Right now you're rocking with Jules Andre Brown, Rolly Rails, Jamal Steels, and Horsepower. You know what it is, all right?
Yo, it's Iron Sue, man. I want to shout out Crimes and Treasons Radio, man. CITR 101.9, man. Turn up, turn up, turn up.
Hello, and welcome back to The Real World with Dama
and Dora
on CITR 101.9 FM. We just played Swans off of the EP. I just closed the tab. Well, a sick EP with a really funny name. it was really cool. We are joined today by Dama's parents.
Say hello again.
Hi.
Hi. There they are.
So for February, which is Black History Month, we are talking about all just like focusing on Black directors and Black actors. And this week we watched Ava DuVernay movies.
Yeah.
And we just had a sick convo on like football culture in South America. And you guys had like a lovely tie to like.
Yeah. So I'm just going to bring that in because football culture in South America, like my mom was saying, is very much aimed at the lower classes. And most of the lower classes are Black. So one of the cool. Not cool, it's not fun that there's police brutality, but there is police brutality, and that ties in to a big, like, issue in most of Ava DuVernay's films, and by most, I mean the two that I watched, because I watched Selma and 13.
Shocking.
Yeah, amazing. So Selma is about, basically, like, Martin Luther King, the very important civil rights activist, and, like, the nonviolent protests that he had going on and like the march from Selma to Montgomery and stuff, and there is a lot of police brutality in that, and a lot of the stuff he was fighting for was like not only like equality in terms of being able to vote for like Black people, which technically they were allowed to, but they were barred off with a lot of technicalities all the time, but also just, like, for Black people to be treated like people. And a lot of it was, like, the cops versus Martin Luther King and his people. So it was very sad. It's a thing. Do you want to say any thoughts about Selma? I was very sad for a lot of it.
Yeah, no, I cried the whole time. those movies always get me. It was so sad. Like, and I always, like, I'm always like, oh yeah, you're so privileged. Like, you like don't have to worry about this. And it's like a fun confrontation of it. What I liked about this movie was they really showed more than I think I've seen in any other movies about this kind of like struggle. Is it was like there are like white people in power who like just don't get it. Like, Lyndon B. Johnson just like was like, oh yeah, this is like an issue, but like.
But look at this other issue.
And it was like, no, like, that's systematic of, like, all this other stuff that would be fixed if, or, like, would be better if we focused on Black rights and getting equality.
One of the things that I thought Selma had that a lot of other movies that don't show this have is, like, it focused so much on Martin Luther King's personal life and, like, his personal struggles in that stuff, which I thought was really interesting because, like, the actual history part of it, like, most people know. Like, you can look it up on Wikipedia and figure it out. But what I think makes this a valuable, like, piece of film is that it, like, delves into, like, who Martin Luther King actually was and, like, the struggles that he had with his family and his wife. And, like, he wasn't, like, a totally great person all the time. Like, he was cheating on his wife. It wasn't fun. He, like, lied to her all the time. He was a very flawed man.
It's really humanizing, which is, like, sick. I feel like it's so easy to, like, put these, like, figures on pedestals and be like, they were amazing, they were perfect, and it's like,
Exactly my thoughts. It's funny. I had to actually go to Wikipedia to say, I need to read a little bit more because, for me, Martin Luther King was such a, exactly on a, such a high pedestal, and I'm like,
pedestal.
How do you say sorry?
Pedestal.
Pedestal.
Pedestal is beautiful,
sorry,
though.
Okay, it's like epitome and epitome.
CITR, the radio with accent.
I actually went to Wikipedia to find out a little bit more because I said, but wait a minute. Wasn't this guy just perfect? All he did. And it's true. And they show really complicated parts, very human parts, but at the same time... It's like I said, he was just a human being trying to fight for something that he believed in, and I wish all the countries in the world that have these inequalities had people that can actually represent them and have a voice that they don't. And in many countries in South America, I imagine in Africa, many other countries that don't have these voices like Martin Luther King was. That's why I was joking about the joke I made before.
That's what I like about this movie too. I feel like that's something that, because there's so much like race issues in the States right now, and it's not like, I don't think there are like leaders in that movement in the same way I think Martin Luther King kind of was like, he and Malcolm X and so many other people were like, they were the paragons of these movements and they held up these rhetorics and people supported them, and that's just not a thing anymore. Like, maybe social media has had it like so dispersed that you can't really like pinpoint anymore. But it was like lovely to be like, oh, these people are rallying behind a human, like this person is like representing a cause.
And so much of the movie was like going back to the president that was like, I want this guy to keep being the figurehead. I don't want Malcolm X to be the one that's leading this movement. So, like, yeah, I feel like they touch upon a lot of these, like, really important aspects of the civil rights movement that, like, you don't really think about that much a lot. Like, I hadn't thought about, like, oh, he was, like, the big guy, and now we don't really have that anymore with, like, Black Lives Matter and that stuff. Like, it's just a movement. It doesn't really have, like, the person leading them. Mm-hmm. And that did, maybe that is why it was so effective, like, the fact that there was someone to rally behind, like, just a person that represents everything you're fighting for, kind of. But then you figure out that there's all these issues with the person that you're that represents everything you're fighting for. That's why it's so cool. It's like all these extra things that you find out about. It's like there is some sort of flaw in rallying behind like one person and thinking that they represent everything, because they're just a person too. So it's cool. It's a fun thing. Thoughts?
Amazing comment about the social medias, right? Because where social media giving a voice to everyone, now everybody's entitled to have an opinion and make it public and be sort of famous, if you want, depending on the amount of followers you have. At the same time, they kind of eliminated the need of a big leader, someone who acts as a conduit for a lot of people's opinion somehow. I wonder if that is so nice. I mean, if you are to be a leader like such as Martin Luther King or one of the past leaders we had, I don't know, I can think of Gandhi or some other guys, you had to be, you know, thoroughly vetted by the public opinion, by your enemies, by your adversaries. Now you don't have that anymore. Perhaps that is why you don't see leaders anymore. What you see, even if you look at the president of the United States, I mean, you see big social media actors, but you don't see these guys that are inspiring, that are the role models to a big amount of people. I wonder if that is really a side effect, if you want, of all of us having a voice. And dividing the big voice from leaders, right?
I was actually listening to, I think it was radio.
A podcast?
Yeah, a podcast. I think it was Radiolab. It was This American Life. And they were just talking about, like, Donald Trump and the thoughts. Like, it was either the episode right after Trump was inaugurated or a few episodes after, and they were just looking at like both sides of like the people that are happy with it, the people that are not happy with it. And one of the like stories that they were looking at were a group of people that just called themselves like trolls on the internet. So they were basically having this party about Trump being inaugurated, not because they cared so much about Trump being inaugurated, but the fact that they memed Trump into the presidency. And I think that is such like a powerful phrase that to me really encapsulates one of the really important parts of Trump's campaign. He was memed into the presidency. Like, if he had not had so much social media appeal. Mommy, do you understand what a meme is? Dora, do you want to explain
what
a meme?
Video or something, no?
Okay.
Yeah, it's like an image that kind of has like a universal meaning attached to it. So like, like Pepe the Frog doesn't make any sense because like that his whole point was that he meant literally anything. But like, a meme would be like I called something in my contemporary socio-theory class a meme. It was an old lady kind of going like, and like you, it would be like when you like when you've been waiting for them to get ready for 3 hours and you're just like done.
Puffy, the this is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife. That's a meme. Like that's just a verbal meme, but it's something that like you say and it has a meme.
Implicit cultural and emotional attachment.
Yeah. So what happened with Trump was a lot of social media stuff was happening and they were just like posting pictures of Trump like doing things and saying things and they like making it into a thing that people were talking about. Like if no one had talked about it, he would have just kept being like it would have kept being a joke because at the start most people thought it was a joke. It was just like what is this guy doing? Like you're not a politician, you're not going to run. But then it just kept getting more and more social media stuff, and that made a big impact. So that's cool. I thought that.
Would you guys have thoughts on the movie? What thoughts did you guys have of the movie? I know there was some controversy. Yeah.
It's for us having lived in South America, especially in Brazil, where it's like, yeah, nobody talks about discrimination. Nobody talks about like. Supposedly, officially, everybody.
People talk about discrimination with police.
Yeah, lately they have, of course. It's like they have a couple of nasty things they say about linking crime to people of a certain, with certain features that look like this or that have this type of skin or this or that or that dress like this kind of profiling that always tends to the black people, to the minorities, let's say. Black, poor, it's like black/poor always linked, and it's nasty. It's bad, and it has been addressed as like this kind of profiling by the police. At the same time, yeah, you it's like officially everybody's equal, but you see these kind of things that like you say, okay, are we?
Are there any Brazilian or South American movies you can think of that are kind of on par with Selma at all?
For me, at least two in Brazil. You have the Elipcor, which is
That's not. I don't think it's comparable.
Which because it's about all the bad guys in the same neighborhood. They all look more or less the same. Yeah? They are not completely black, but in Brazil you don't have black and white. You have a continuum from blonde German to deep black, but usually you are in the this neighborhoods you are kind of darkish more than blondish. So they go there more than anywhere else. Actually, that troop is just made for that.
Can I explain what Tropa de Elite is about?
Because
people won't understand what that means. Tropa de Elite, or the Elite Corp, whatever my dad called it, is a Brazilian movie about a task force in Rio de Janeiro that just goes into favelas, like, hunting down drug dealers, basically. So my dad was explaining, like, the type of people that they go for throughout the movie. Like, it's mostly white dudes on the corp. And mostly like darker people in the favelas being attacked by this task force, and it's a like ultra violent movie, and that's kind of the point of it. It's supposed to show like, what they're doing is bad, but also we need to solve the drug problem. So that was the first movie. What was the second one?
Yeah, the other would be The City of God, Cidade de Deus, which is also about the. Let's say the neglect of these people, which these people is treated and kind of secluded into the slums, and how this becomes kind of a vicious circle, right? Where you're poor, you don't get educated, you breed more poor and uneducated people who has no means to get better educated and get out of there. And also you have the police. Corruption in there and how they operate and everything. I cannot imagine of another one that is like a social struggle of a class that you could see in a Latin American movie.
Yeah, the reason that I disagreed with you with Tropa Gelice, I haven't actually finished seeing Ciudad de Dios, so I can't comment on that. But Tropa Gelice, I definitely agree, shows the racial tension as much as Selma does. But Selma is like very focused on like the figurehead that was Martin Luther King, and there has never been such a movement in South America. Like, we have never had such a huge figure.
I think that like Martin Luther King's like central role was more like to focus the tensions. I think that makes sense, just from like what I've heard, to like also, showcase.
The thing is that you had a very clear and polarized society. You had the black people and the white people. Black and poor, white and dominant. Somehow it was a much clearer battle than what you might have anywhere else. I mean, my wife was mentioning Africa. Of course, there's lots of black people in Africa. What are we talking about, except of South Africa? But the truth is, you have dominant tribes and you have dominated tribes. Think in Rwanda, Hutus and Tutsis and these kind of things. So all the other struggles are not so clear as the ones we've seen in the movie, Selma, right? Of course, Martin Luther King is kind of able to focus all this, and you said how privileged you are, and yes, you are indeed, in living in North America, in a place where all these things turn up to be the right way, right? So all these struggles actually, let's say, the good cause triumphs somehow. But sometimes struggles are not so clear. Again, as we said, in Brazil, there's not black and white. In Argentina, there's not black and white. It's kind of more original people and less original people, more like European immigrants and less European immigrants. In Africa, one even don't have to tell about it. I mean, it's much more difficult to tell who's who. But you do have all this domination relationships in the third world, right?
Yeah, I feel like it's a lot more in South America specifically, because I don't know about other places. It's about like rich and poor. It's not about like your race. Like, it happens to be that like some races are overrepresented in the different minority groups, but like it's so much less about the race and so much more about the culture within those. So like, I think like that's a good point. The fact that you have so much
miscigenação.
Mixing of the races. You have a big continuum, so you can't just like draw the line like you're black, you're white, and then
but
work
it makes
with that.
It makes it all the more difficult, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in Brazil specifically, in Brazil specifically, you do have a little bit more, bias towards or against the black community, I would say.
Mm. The thing is, there isn't
really... It's
a
little bit clearer.
The thing is, you don't really have a unified black community.
No.
You don't think...
They don't see themselves as, okay, we are black. It's like, we're all equal. But then again, that's why I said, are we? Like, quote unquote, are we? You see these kinds of ting-ting things that make you wonder, are we? They're not as organized. They don't have these voices like Martin Luther King was. Another thing that worries me is, do they know their rights? You know, do they know what they deserve? Do they know what they are? Do they know that they can actually make a change? Do they know that they can revert this situation? And this is like the whole hopelessness that Matias was talking about in Cidade de Deus, where you see this little kid that gets a gun put on his hand at age, I don't know, four, whatever, and he starts killing people. And they somehow show the hopelessness, like a kid that grows like this. What's the future? What's the hope for this kind of life? And I don't know if they realize that, like these black people that were led by Martin Luther King, they believed in him, even with his flaws and all of these things and with his doubts, like when he turned, he was crossing the bridge and he turned the other way. Well, what are you doing? And, they had, let's say, hope. They knew their rights and they were ready to fight for them. I don't know if in some other countries, you know, this is clear for them to stand up.
Well,
that's a pretty rare phenomenon. I think the black, the raising of the black consciousness, like, was definitely starting around like the 50s and 60s. And like, I think the centralized voice of Martin Luther King and the also excellent point with like the polarity between the two factions, like everything like in the States at that time kind of like was set up to have kind of the most, like, definitely by no means like nothing is fixed, but like the most harmonious kind of like outcome of like black rights being realized.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I was going to say, like, this, I think, ties in really well to 13th. So,
bring it in.
Yeah. 13th is the documentary that Ava DuVernay made about the 13th Amendment. And the reason that it's called 13th is because it's basically, once slavery ended, there was a huge, like, lack of labor and lots of economic bad stuff happening in the South because they depended on slavery so much. But the 13th Amendment says, like, everyone is free and equal and everything unless you're in jail. Like, if you are a criminal, you can be forced to do, like, forced labor. So, like, there was just a mass imprisonment of a lot of African American people because they needed more people to be working, and basically imprisoning all these people made them be able to get slave labor back legally, essentially. And it goes on to talk about a lot of like the evolution of the prison system in the US, but the way that I think this like ties in is at some point they talk about how the idea of like the black man specifically as a criminal, as like an evil figure, was ingrained into the culture so deeply that even the community themselves was believing it. So you grow up thinking that you, like, you're bound to get into a gang. You're bound to be this evil black person because that's how you were born. And once the community starts believing it, like, what else can you do once the community believes it? And what my mom was saying was, like, do they even, like, when you're given a gun so early, you're just taught that that's, like, the only way that you can go. And my dad was saying, like, you're born into a community where your parents never had education, and then you don't have any education, so you don't give your children any education. And you're just brought up to believe that you're never, there's no reason for you to get an education. You're never going to get an education because it's just not your reality. So I feel like it's, like, interesting how these different ideas of what different communities are supposed to be like can become so ingrained in a culture that even, like, the individuals themselves think, like, yeah, that is what I'm supposed to be like. So that's cool thoughts.
You articulated everything so perfectly. I didn't know.
did you watch 13th as well?
No, I had it open on my computer and then I fell asleep.
Then I want to talk about it a little bit, just like gush over it. I really, really loved this. I didn't finish watching it, but like, it's such an interesting documentary because it really like takes you through the history of how jails kind of evolved, and just like the prison system in general in the U.S. like very chronologically, but it doesn't feel like a documentary. So in Selma, you see like a little, what is it? It's not a watermark. It's like a little symbol that appears.
The Federal Bureau of
yeah. Yeah, so you see that a lot in Selma. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like, it kind of brings you back to the fact that this is a movie and it's not very much trying to be, like, real life. But in a documentary, you'd think that they wouldn't have a lot of, like, graphic stuff going on. Like, you want it to be very, like, down-to-earth, like, showing all these interviews. But 13th has a lot of these, like, little sequences where it's just artwork and, like, words being written down. And it like, it's a very beautiful documentary, the way that it was filmed and, like, actually put on the screen. So first of all, I really thought it was very nice. And the way that it was made was really, like, supposed to engage the viewer and make you be interested in everything that was happening. And I think it's just very cool to watch 13th and Selma, like, one after the other. It doesn't matter which one you watch first, really, because they inform each other so much. So in 13th, you, like, learn a lot of the stuff about Martin Luther King that you would learn about in Selma. But in 13th, it's just talking about, like, facts. Like, oh, Martin Luther King was the figurehead, and they talk about how, sure, these days we remember him as, like, a hero, as a very important person in this movement, but back then he was considered a criminal. Like, he was being investigated by the FBI, which is why I thought about the little seal that keeps appearing in Selma. Like, he was considered a very dangerous man. And in 13th, like, you get to see this part of Martin Luther King too, which I think is cool. But they really talk about the politics of everything. So how this whole thing about the 13th Amendment and how the end of slavery brought about this mass incarceration of African Americans, I think is like, whoa, it kind of blew my mind. I hadn't thought about that at all. But then it also brings in the idea of private prisons, which is so crazy. Like, it makes no sense to me that there's...
It's wild.
It actually exists. So, apparently, in the U.S., there are companies that just make prisons and then make contracts with states that require that the state keep the prisons filled to a certain capacity, regardless of if there's enough crime happening in that state for it to actually be filled. So... they need to be bringing in more people. And it makes no sense to me, because economically that gives everyone an incentive to jail more people for no reason.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie, but it doesn't look like that is what happens, because it's putting money. I mean, you can take or pay kind of contract, and whether you have the people you pay for it, you don't have the people you pay for it anyways, it would always be much more economic to pay even if you don't have the people.
But they have, like, I knew about private prisons before watching this movie. I, like, didn't get all my information from there. And, like, the state is required to keep a certain amount of people in. So, like, they need to keep an inflow of people. It's like, not, you but don't get paid if you don't have the amount of people.
Right, but if you have
need.
To pay anyways for an empty cell, what's the problem with that? I mean, the contractor would have no problem with that. It's the same amount of money with less food, with less services, with less heating, less light, less everything. Sometimes
but they don't
these
get
movies,
the money, though.
Sometimes these movies are a little kind of biased.
Spoiler, I didn't actually see that part of the movie. Like, I saw them mentioning it, and then I had to go to my biology class. Like, I knew about this part of private prisons before the movie. They don't portray it that way.
By the way, what is this stamp of the FBI thing about? I couldn't understand what that meant
Selma. In Selma, I understood those were, like, logs that the FBI were taking on Martin Luther King, and they were, like, presenting it, like, this is the info that the FBI has.
Kind of, this is my archive or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Kind of.
Private prisons, bad. I don't like them. They're bad. But just very quickly, I guess, to wrap up my final thoughts about 13th, I really, really liked it because it focused on this political side. So not only, like, private prisons, but, like, it went through, like, Nixon, Reagan, Bush, and, like, how they, like, angled things so it ended up, like, making the problem worse every time. So, like, they start off talking about Nixon and how he started the war on drugs, but it was, like, a metaphorical war on drugs, so you weren't actually doing anything yet. But then Reagan got a physical war on drugs, so they were actually, like, troopers going out and, like, killing people and just arresting as many people as they could and being super violent. And then I guess, like, Bush also, like, had the war on crime. And this whole, like, idea that the Americans have, like, war on X. Like, everything ends up being, like, the war on something. And I don't know, a lot of the way that has been presented has ended up leading to just a lot of black people going to jail. And that's really crazy. So I think it's, like, a valuable thing to look at and consider. The way that politics affects people in general.
Hell yeah. Also, fun fact about Film Sock, we have a beer garden tonight.
What does that mean, Dora? Does that mean free beer?
Oh, it does. It means free beer. It means free popcorn. It means free candy. It means free screening of my favorite movie, Space Jam. So the world should come. There's going to be like a really fun halftime show.
That Dora planned.
Yeah. Prepare is going to be like pears, and they're going to be basketball hoops, and then try to throw.
That's perfect. That is so good. You shouldn't have told anyone.
Well, no. They can prep. It's like my message for the people. Nice. And then also, person with the best R. Kelly fact, I'll just like support.
Okay. Nice. I, like, what if the R. Kelly fact is...
No, you don't tell anyone. They can't know.
Is that the fact that is going to win?
Oh, probably. Okay, nice. I have a fun fact that I tell everyone. I think it's super fun. I was talking to Claire and I was like, Dom is going to win. Dom has this in the bag.
Yeah.
No spoilers.
Okay.
But it's a good fact.
What's the prize?
Is it free beer? Because we have that anyway. maybe. We'll see.
We'll figure it out.
Going shopping today.
Nice.
Try to get something nice for the people.
Great stuff. Great stuff. You know what else is going to be at the beer garden? Mm. My parents.
Yay.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Signing autographs.
And having free beer.
It's like, that sounds like the perfect get up.
It's the dream.
So that is happening tonight. Doors are at 7 in room 2301 in the Nest. We're going to play you guys out with Through Feet Justin off of the album Holidays EP. I've played it a few times. I love it. I don't care. I have no shame. Coming up next is Dave Radio with Radio Dave.
On the radio.
Yeah. See y'all next week. You know what? Shout out to Dama's parents.
Yeah. Shout out to Dama's parents. Cool.
Woo. Okay. Good night.
Bye-bye.
In the corner, you know the girl is keeping me, not talking orders. The borders be put up in.